Hi, welcome to my podcast. I'm Dr. Lauren Goodall. I'm a clinical psychologist, and this is Psychology in Short. Before we start, I'd like to give a shout out to my sponsor, which is md365access.com. And what this is a Teladoc service, and it is a 24/7 Teladoc service. So it gives you a certain level of convenience to receive medical advice, input from a medical doctor, board certified MDs, for a monthly fee. So if you would like to stop having to be dragged to the actual doctor's office, this is certainly a nice option. So for a monthly fee, it can cover you and your dependents. So if you're interested in more information, I refer you to my webpage, which is drlaurengoodall.com. Okay, so one of the topics I'd like to address today is bipolar 2. And it is one of the most confused, messed up diagnoses ever. And as I start to talk about it, I think you'll start to understand why. It is just not clearly diagnosed. It's easy to miss. It's incredibly easy to miss. And so a lot of people who get this diagnosis, it often takes years. And the research is kind of painful that way. It says people range anywhere 5 years, 6 years, 8 years to get the proper diagnosis. So it is really worthy in terms of going into a little more detail. I've worked extensively with bipolar 2. Understanding what the disorder can look like is really important. And also saying, hey, you know, what is this disorder and why does it get confused all the time? So that's what I'm going to cover. All right, so what bipolar 2 usually looks like most of the time is depression. What is depression? Depression is sad mood, low energy, loss of interest. There's a fancier word for that. It's called anhedonia, where you just lose interest in things around you. You lose motivation. So depression is a primary feature of this disorder. So many times it looks so much like it, it's often treated with antidepressants, anti-anxiety meds, and the person just generally doesn't feel better over time. They're like, hey, this just doesn't seem to work. But, you know, it takes a while to assess that. So that's a problem. So as I said, I'm going to talk about the depressive aspect. I talked about bipolar 1, which is more of the mania aspect, which has the depression, but it also has the mania. And I spoke of, you know, I call mania happy plus projects. Okay, that's a high energy, hyper energy, probably a lot of projects going on. And that is where, and eventually you go into little to no sleeping, and that's when mania gets more severe and more intervention needs to be applied, medications, sometimes a hospitalization in order to re-regulate that. Psychosis is possible at those points. But I think for a lot of people, mania does not have to go that high up the scale, but if it does, that's what you do. But no matter what, you will be looking at some medication management to regulate that, usually in the line of mood stabilizers. Okay, I will qualify, I'm not a psychiatrist. I'm the person that does the therapy, but I've sort of, been around working with the psychiatrist for years and working with patients who are medicated, so you sort of get familiar with the territory. All right, so if I take apart, there are words in this diagnosis and words that are used in the inventories when people are in the process of getting diagnosed that throw people off, and understandably. Researchers have one way to go about it, and clinicians have another. And sometimes that doesn't always work out. For instance, in this particular case, bipolar 2 is diagnosed with the word hypomania. People are like, what is hypomania? All right. Well, let's talk about the difference between warm water and hot water, right? Okay, warm water is hypomania, and mania is hot water. So even though they're both water, okay, the difference is intensity, right? Warm is a lot less intense, obviously, than hot, okay? So when you talk about mania, what are we talking about, really? We're talking about high energy, okay? Energy, energy, energy. I'm not a fan of the term. It's very misleading. People, you know, I mean, when you talk about stigma, nothing like saying a word mania that sounds like maniac, okay? So, you know, they should just say high energy, you know, but I don't write the books. I just practice the business. But I would certainly change it because it just throws people off. And in some cases, depending on what type of article you're looking at, some articles actually confuse hypomania, which is a lower intensity energy, with mania, which is a super high energy. Big difference, big intel problem. And you might say, well, how does that happen? Well, you know, I love research. I rely on it, and I love to research different items and see what they've got. But sometimes it just doesn't check out the way we need it to. So what you experience with the patients on the front line, so many times I'd be talking to patients and they're like, the term grandiosity would be in the inventory. And they're like, I'm not grandiose. And they're not, okay? Grandiosity can occur with psychosis where, you know, you're writing the book of time. You're bigger than life. That's grandiosity. It also comes with narcissism. All right. So that's like that arrogance, you know. But, you know, you'd have to be at a pretty high pitch of mania where you might experience some of that if you got delusional or something. You experience some psychosis. But generally, people with mood disorders, they don't feel grandiose, okay? They're aware that, you know, they have days that they have issues with and they deal, but, you know, grandiosity isn't part of the scheme. So I beg to differ, you know, with that term. And the problem with it is, you know, they might say other things check out, but that doesn't. So they, you know, they take it to their provider or the psychiatrist or whomever, and they'll say, hey, it doesn't check out because it doesn't meet this criterion. And that's where there's some loopholes, and that's a problem. Another reason why people don't get diagnosed properly. So one, it's the way the research, the inventory is written. And like I said, if you miss a criterion here or there, then they think, oh no, well then you have a depression or an anxiety. So that can happen. I never really play to the test. I play to the person. I listen to the patient. That's always been my rule because I think there's so many sub pieces that go into some disorders. If you're interested in just memorizing things, you're going to miss a lot. It doesn't always pan out that way. So that's the difference. You know, when you're in the front line and doing the therapy, and by front line, I'm talking about social workers, master's level therapists and psychologists. You're the guys on the front line doing the therapy. It's not always going to pan out the way the research says. So we have to be aware of that. Like I said, part of the problem is some of the wording. Okay. People don't understand the words. And I think if you change some of that, it certainly would help. And another piece, I'm going to say this generally can fall on the patient. There are patients who have agendas in the sense that they don't like the word bipolar. They don't want to be anywhere near the word bipolar. And they kind of lead and push their provider in that venue into another venue. So there's a lot of stall tactics, you know, or just, you know, they just don't get diagnosed properly because of it. I've always said, listen, you know, I don't care what we call this stuff. Let's just get it treated, okay? And especially with the term bipolar 2, people really don't understand it. They confuse it with bipolar 1 all the time, and these are very, very just different animals. For instance, bipolar 1 is more linked with manic episodes, so higher energy episodes, okay, as opposed to depression. Depression is far less significant with bipolar 1. Bipolar 1 is convenient in the fact, watch how I say this term convenient, in terms of it's a bit more visible in terms of its diagnosis. You get a clearer run of what is going on. So in that way, it's an easier diagnosis. Bipolar 2 just looks like clinical depression, major depressive disorder. So it is often misconstrued. Now, not only does it have a depressive aspect, it leads by depression. Depression is far more common, but it also has episodes or just normal periods of normal mood. And then it has what we call hypomania. What is hypomania? Hypomania is energy spurts, okay? Hypo means under, lower, okay? So you have some energy, and it's different than the energy you have with depression. Depression, you don't have energy, okay? People are notorious when they're depressed to start accumulating laundry loads, you know, that they haven't gotten to. Why? It's not that they don't want the organization. It's that they don't have the energy to do it. Dishes in the sink, you know, as a person gets more depressed, fatigue is very common and sleep problems are very common with depression. So you combine all those things that, you know, people get behind on tasks. They have a hard time focusing to follow through. That becomes a factor. So what's most predominant with bipolar 2 is depression. So when a person comes in, usually they're going to be complaining about the depression. So, you know, we diagnose them with the depression, and then we, you know, have the person doing the meds, the psych nurse or the psychiatrist, do a trial of antidepressants. Okay, so, and that's sort of our monitoring thing. And depending on how they do, then we kind of know what we have. It's sort of a reverse diagnosis because people who are prone to the bipolar spectrum genetically really don't know that, okay? Most people don't know, especially bipolar 2, very hard to diagnose. They're not familiar with other people who have it because basically it has those normal moods, and then it has a very, very short window of higher energy. But it's usually pretty subtle. And the higher energy is when people say they get a break from the depression, then they start organizing, doing their laundry. They say, hey, I just felt pretty normal and I got stuff done. So I'd hardly call that a manic episode. You know, some will hit the and go shopping because they felt a little better. And you know, they could do some spending there. I'm not going to say it's impossible. Of course, it's possible. But generally, people will start taking apart tasks that have been sitting for a while and just feel good about getting some stuff done. Full-blown mania is taking on multiple different tasks, super high energy, and it's a lot more visible. Hypomania, as in bipolar 2, isn't very visible for other people. Okay. It's just, for instance, you know, built into the bipolar 2 is more of an anxious type of depression. Okay. So, the anxiety is something that often gets misconstrued too in terms of diagnosis. And all of a sudden, so if you have some anxiety, you might, you know, not want to go to meet with people, you'll socialize less, that kind of thing. Whereas when that little episode of hypomania kicks in, the person might be more social. They'll be more willing to go out. They'll be more willing to talk to people. So, and according to the criterion, hypomania, in order to be diagnosed, must last 4 days. And honestly, either I've met up with all the wrong people in 25 years, but my clients don't report it lasting 4 days, okay? They'll be lucky if it lasts 2, okay? That would be lucky, all right? So, and most other people don't notice it other than, you know, she usually is kind of anxious, but she's willing to go out today. Okay, there's a little, you know, change in functioning there. So the other reason why I think this bipolar 2 is massively messed up in diagnosis, notice the subtlety I'm saying, it is massively misdiagnosed, is because they put these time frames on it. And if the people don't meet that time frame, then they think, oh, it can't be the diagnosis. So I'm going to say, folks, common sense has to prevail. You know, look at the test, look at your symptoms, or look at the inventory, the checklist, what have you, and look at your symptoms. The better you are at reporting your symptoms, the better the provider is going to be able to tighten it up. So that's really important too. And so, like I said, I'm not a fan of time duration, because usually when I'm looking at 4 days, I'm usually looking at somebody who's manic, who's not sleeping, who can't slow down, and, you know, is going to need some help with some medication to slow it down. So we've got the words grandiosity, we've got the words confusing hypomania with mania, which are two different animals. They're about as common as warm water is to hot water. And we've got time durations, and we've got some anxiety thrown in there, and we've got something that looks exactly like major depressive disorder. So there's a lot of reasons why this diagnosis can be missed. Now, I will tell you an inventory I do like, and it's called the Bipolar Spectrum Diagnostic Scale. It's by Dr. Ron Pace. He's an MD. And it talks about more of the subtleties and the depressed mood, the normal mood. You know, there's an assumption that people who are bipolar have no normal mood. Well, that's not true, okay? So they do have normal mood. But with a person with bipolar 2, the spurt of energy, and I'm talking about the energy to clean your house, make sure, you know, your laundry's washed and done, clean out under your sink, maybe organize your pans, cook or whatever it is not going to be that noticeable to the rest of the world. It may be it's noticeable to the person. Just they say, hey, I just felt, they call it normal. Okay, I just felt my normal. So it is a tough diagnosis, but it is at this point much better at getting diagnosed. But I always say, you know, if you monitor your mood symptoms and your motivation level and your sleep and your concentration, and you start saying, you know, I'm noticing I'm getting depressed, and then I'm getting a little anxious, and then I'm okay again, you know. So they can start to figure that out. As I said, bipolar 1 is visibly a whole lot easier to recognize, but bipolar 2 is a bit tougher. And so, you know, as I said, if you're a person who, you know, has to have exact wording, and a lot of people are, I say don't be that person, because so much goes on in the subtleties, and you're going to miss a lot of diagnostic information. One thing that I will say and I've gotten a lot of referrals where people who are diagnosed with other things, and I'm like, that's probably this. You know, or we start people out with antidepressants, and if they do great, great. But if they don't, I don't believe in a busload of meds, okay? I think if you get the diagnosis right, generally people don't need to be stacked with meds. And I think most med providers aren't interested in stacking either. I really have to say that on their behalf, they're not. But, you know, so for instance, so you give them the antidepressant, they improve. Okay, you're dealing with probably a straight depression, a flat depression. A straight depression just doesn't have any energy to it and it responds to the antidepressant. But if you are somewhat predisposed to the spectrum, bipolar spectrum, you might take that antidepressant, and antidepressants with a person who's got bipolar spectrum, a person can experience some mania over time with it. So they're going to start to feel more uncomfortable. They're going to be like, whoa, this is uncomfortable in a whole different way. That's information, okay? That's saying, hey, you know, people who have bipolar 2 generally aren't good on the antidepressants. They look at a mood stabilizer for that. But at first, there are trials on antidepressants just because depression is the main symptom, okay? The little energy quirk that you're going to see usually is very hard to see. So that's going to lead. But if they do experience some mania, and you can get medication-induced mania from antidepressants if you run on the spectrum, if you have some bipolar tendencies, and you probably won't even know it, that is where you might feel more uncomfortable on the antidepressant, and that has to be rerouted. I will say this, and I always say, hey, I'm not a psychiatrist, but I will say, you know, I obviously wouldn't talk about this topic unless I've had some success with it, actually good success with treating it, both, you know, combining the medication aspect with the therapy aspect. I always say treat the biology and then the psychology. Otherwise, you're going to go everywhere and, you know, you're going to go topic to topic, issue to issue psychology-wise, and the person's still going to feel lousy. So you want to kind of regulate it just like you would regulate blood sugar. You know, you go talk to somebody whose blood sugar's too high, they're not going to be able to hear you. They might stroke out on you. Or if their blood sugar's too low, they're not going to be able to hear you because they might pass out. So as you know, I'm a big fan of understanding the brain biology and mood disorders. It's not just behavioral stuff. But it is very treatable stuff, and so many more people are coming forward that are famous and saying, hey, I have bipolar too, you know. But I think it's what would be more interesting is if they say how long it took them to get diagnosed, because it really is a bit tough for the providers too, depending on where, you know, how a person presents when they come in. We see them for, you know, an hour at a time. You've got to see them enough to be able to see the variation and the subtlety and the change, but also be aware what that hypomania is not mania. There's a lot of providers out there that don't understand that distinction. They expect to see a manic person. No, expect to see somebody who can clean their house and do some normal things where normally they might be more depressed. And there are degrees of depression, folks. I mean, degrees, okay? There are plenty of people who carry, you know, like a low grade of depression. And it doesn't get very severe. It just kind of, you know, lingers and stays. And it's more of a baseline. These people are more introverted. And then they can have that little episode of energy. A good predictor of later bipolar 2, and I say later, okay, because this not so little, but this diagnosis generally doesn't hit until mid-20s, okay? And of course, that's a very confusing time in your life with a lot of things going on. You're going to think it's your relationship, it's the people at work, it's because you can't tell, you know? And, you know, so that's a factor. Understanding that it comes in at this age range, but what is a good predictor? An early predictor of bipolar 2 is anxiety. Even a child with anxiety. So your worrier, your social avoider, your introverted kid may become bipolar too as they get older. You know, you'll need a couple decades to find out. Not everybody who has anxiety becomes bipolar too, but it has become a noteworthy predictor of that. And so who knew that the disorder that's really about depression, really in the beginning, is about anxiety. So I think understanding those pieces is and understanding how these things get diagnosed with other depressive disorders, anxiety disorders, and confused along with mania, is why the delays in the diagnosis is years. So the more you can read up, but as I say, don't confuse warm water with hot water. That's a different animal. So hopefully I have some people who are listening to this, who are going through programs, maybe even nursing programs, what have you, to understand what the subtleties of bipolar look like, because it's important that you understand it. All right, folks, I think I am going to close out this cast, and hopefully I gave you a little more information than you had in recognizing it and what your options are. And just recognizing that bipolar 2 is more of a nasty grade depression, and it gets confused with nasty grade. It gets confused with depression all the time. And I would say, when you look at a mood stabilizer, the one that I had seen work quite well with a nasty grade depression, again, I'm not a psychiatrist, but with my clients, was lamotrigine. It was very helpful for nasty grade depression. But by all means, ask your psychiatrist or psych nurse for more information to see if it would be appropriate for you. So with that, thanks for joining me, and I look forward to the next guest. Thank you. Good night, or good morning. I don't know. Depends on where you're at, right? Okay.